This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor. From fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB public media app.
This is MPB Think Radio's In Legal Terms. Our expert host is Adam Kilgore, attorney. I'm Liz Gill. Adam, thanks for being our host.
Well, thank you. It is a pleasure to be the host of Mississippi Public Broadcasting's In Legal Terms. We are thrilled today to be with you as always. Got another great show we've lined up here with our guest today, Liz. Looking forward to having Rob McDuff join us from the Mississippi Center for Justice. Rob's a graduate of Millsaps College and Harvard Law School and has been licensed attorney in Mississippi since 1984. Looking forward to hearing from him related to his experience from when he first became a lawyer, and then also hearing about some of the unique cases and work that he's done. Rob, welcome to the show. How are you today this morning?
Thank you, Adam. I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Liz and I are thrilled to have you. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Sure. Thank you.
Now, Rob, you represent clients in a variety of matters, cases involving voting rights, employment discrimination, free speech, police misconduct, reproductive rights. You've got a varied experience. You also have been with the staff at the Mississippi Center for Justice for since its inception. So tell us a little bit about your experience. You started practicing law in 1984.
I actually started a little bit before that. That's when I joined the Mississippi Bar, but I started practicing law in 1982. I'm a native of Mississippi. I grew up in Hattiesburg, and have spent most but not all of my career here. In 2003, I was one of several lawyers. I mean, I've practiced in Mississippi since the early 90s and also some before that, actually, but doing mostly civil rights type cases and criminal defense. But in 2003, a number of lawyers in Jackson and elsewhere got together and decided that we needed to start a new nonprofit public interest law office that could represent people in systemic cases involving racial and economic justice. And we started it, and I was on the, I did not actually work there beginning 2003. I was on the board for several years, and then in 2017, I ended up, I agreed to direct a new impact litigation and advocacy project for the Mississippi Center for Justice. And so I have, in addition to my previous private practice, I spend most of my time now working for MCJ on particular public interest cases usually involving issues of racial and economic justice.
Now, a little bit more about you, and I may make you slightly uncomfortable, Rob, but I'm okay with it, and I suspect you are too. Many of the things you have listed, in fact, probably all of them, that's in your background and your legal experience, involve topics that are people tend to be passionate about. You obviously acquired that passion for your fellow humanity somewhere along the way. Anything in particular stick out? Was there a certain type of case or a personal experience that led you to feel so passionate about these types of issues?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It was actually, I distinctly remember when I was about 12 years old in Hattiesburg, and I was sort of getting old enough to where I was reading the newspaper occasionally. And there was an article in the paper about the trial of the Klansman who killed Vernon Dahmer. And this would have been, I think, 1967 or 68. And I was reading that article, and at the end of it, I had really two questions in my mind. One of them was what was the courtroom that they're talking about, the courtroom and the arguments the lawyers were making in the jury. And it's like, what is this? What is a courtroom like? What is this theater? Why are these people making speeches? And then the second question I had was, why did they kill this man? And that led me not at some point thereafter, I actually ran across a book about Dr. Martin Luther King in the school library. And I checked it out and read it. And even though the civil rights movement was going on around us there in Hattiesburg, I was somewhat sheltered from it. But this really opened my eyes to what was going on in Mississippi and to the civil rights movement. And at the same time, I'd become very interested in the law and courtrooms. I used to go down sometimes after school to the courthouse to watch trials. And so I just developed these sort of parallel interests in being a lawyer, being a courtroom lawyer, and in civil rights. And then I was able to sort of merge them to a significant extent a civil rights lawyer during most of my career.
Rob, it sounds like to me you were a litigator long before you were a litigator. You've been doing that for a while. The Mississippi Center for Justice, we started speaking on this just a moment ago. It began in 2003, and you were mentioning it was a collection of lawyers. The term that sticks out to me is homegrown public interest law firm. I thought that's a unique collection of words to explain. Tell us a little bit more about the center's work and the mindset there.
Well, you know, we were back in the 1960s and 70s, there were a number of legal organizations that opened up in Jackson to help with the civil rights movement, help represent people in the civil rights movement. They included the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, had an office down on Ferris Street in Jackson, Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under the Law, which is a national organization based in Washington, had an office in Jackson. An organization called the Lawyers Constitutional Defense Committee had an office in Jackson. And then there was the ACLU of Mississippi and a few others. But those three that I first mentioned were very big in representation and the promotion of civil rights and challenges to racial discrimination. But all of them closed their offices sort of late 60s, early 70s, except the Lawyers Committee, which kept it open until just around 1980. And one of the people who was in the discussions was Fred Banks, a great civil rights lawyer, later state representative, justice on the Mississippi Supreme Court. He had retired from the Mississippi Supreme Court by then, was practicing law, and he was one of the lawyers in the NAACP Legal Defense Fund's office on Ferris Street. So he had that history. The rest of us knew about the history. And so we just thought there's a real need for another office, a nonprofit that can deal with sort of systemic issues and represent people who can't afford lawyers and really specialize in these types of cases. And so we created it, and a number of people were involved in it. Martha Bergmark, who later became the first president of the Mississippi Center for Justice, Brad Pigott, Isaac Byrd, Suzanne Keyes, who had Carol Burnett, Warren Yoder, Carlton Reeves. A number of people were involved in starting the organization back then, and that was sort of the legacy that we were trying to sort of uphold and fill going forward. And since then, we just celebrated our 20th anniversary last year, and we've really it has grown to be bigger and has done more than any of us thought it would at the time.
Earlier in the show, we had set things up a little bit related to the work of the Mississippi Center for Justice, and there's quite an array of initiatives and objectives that the organization has. Specifically, tell us what work does the Mississippi Center for Justice do regarding education?
Thanks, Adam. We have sort of an education policy initiative that is involved in a variety of issues surrounding education in Mississippi, including school funding and including resources for schools that have been left behind. There's a real problem with some children don't have access to broadband and to, which was really exposed during COVID, when people went to learning by Zoom and were not in the classroom. And that gap has been something that our education policy project has been working on, along with a number of things, but most particularly related to resources so that so that people, you know, poor and middle class people have access to education in a way that sometimes is made difficult because of the lack of those resources.
And so that sounds like you're describing a technological disparity. Which I know disparity is kind of the concern there on related to education matters. I know there's issues related to racial makeup of students or students with disabilities or students that don't speak English as a first language. So that seems to fit in the mix of some of the other work that the center is doing.
It does. And all the center's work comes together in many ways. But I do want to say it's not only a technological disparity. It's a disparity in resources, including, you know, whether there's enough toilet paper in the bathrooms. I mean, whether there are enough teachers, whether there are enough books. And so we've had a real crisis in Mississippi with educational funding. But MCJ is sort of in the middle of it, trying to, along with several other different organizations, trying to improve the situation.
And recently you had an education-related case before the Supreme Court of Mississippi. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what the outcome was?
Yeah, there is a provision in the Mississippi Constitution called Section 208. It basically says the legislature shall not appropriate money to any school that is not, quote, a free school, end quote. And that means a public school. So you're not if there's money that's going to be spent on education, public money, taxpayer money, it has to go to public schools, according to the Mississippi Constitution. A couple of years ago, the legislature actually appropriated $10 million for infrastructure grants to private schools. And because we believe there's not enough money being sent to the public schools as it is, we've never fully funded public schools in Mississippi, except for in over the last 23 years, except for two particular years. So we brought suit to uphold the principle of the Mississippi Constitution that if you're gonna spend money on schools, it needs to go to public schools. Private schools have their own funding because they charge tuition, et cetera. We filed the case. We won the case in Chancery Court of Hinds County, Mississippi, and then the state appealed to the Mississippi Supreme Court. And we had a ruling just about a week ago or so that ruled against us. And I'm happy to talk more about that if you'd like, Adam.
Briefly, because I'd like to educate our listeners and help them. My recollection is that was in part on a standing issue. Mm-hmm. If you can briefly explain what standing is, I think that'd be good for all our listeners.
Yeah, there's a legal doctrine it's sort of second nature to the lawyers, but it's really not something that's really talked about publicly. It's called standing, and that means the person who's bringing the suit has to show that somehow they are injured or could be injured by the action that's being challenged. And so in this particular case, we were representing, it was the Mississippi Center for Justice, ACLU of Mississippi, and Democracy Forward, and we were representing Parents for Public Schools, which is an organization primarily of public school parents. It's also the public school teachers involved, public school administrators, and others who support public schools. And we brought it basically on behalf of the interests of the public school children. And so the Mississippi Supreme Court, after we argued the case, ended up issuing a ruling last week that basically said that because these were federal funds that were being appropriated for the use of private schools, and they had not been specifically earmarked for education, that we, as representatives of public school parents and children, could not show that they were harmed. And the court went out of its way to point out that these funds were not earmarked for education, and therefore, if they'd not been spent on private schools, maybe they would have been spent on something else, non-educational. Our point was, and our disagreement with the court, is that maybe they didn't have to spend that federal money on education, but they did. And once you spend it on education, that's when, in our view, the principle of the Mississippi Constitution kicks in, that if there's going to be money spent on education, it needs to go to the public schools and is required to go to the public schools, we believe. Now, I'll just add one more thing. Because the court ruled that we did not have standing, it never addressed that question of whether the appropriation was unconstitutional. But the ruling basically dodged the issue, but it also made it very clear that it's going to be difficult for anyone to challenge at least that particular grant with of federal money to the private schools.
Well, and the name of the show is In Legal Terms, so we just learned a new legal term, listeners, which is standing. It is an issue that can come up in virtually every case, and it is that scenario where maybe from the outside people are viewing it and why can't this person bring this case or how could this person bring this case? They have no connectivity to it. Obviously, Rob, y'all disagreed on the court's finding related to standing and certainly respect that. But again, just informing our listeners, I'd like to switch over to another topic that the Mississippi Center for Justice has spent some time on, and that is the concept of economic justice. In looking at your website, which is y'all have done a really good job with. I know there's been some work in the past about predatory lending cases or foreclosure protection and some other things. If you could briefly tell us a little bit about the work that your firm does regarding economic justice.
Yeah, it's exactly the type of thing you're talking about. Predatory lending, foreclosures. There's our economic justice program does a lot of work with people who may not have a lot of experience with finance and sort of, you know, how to get loans and how to make sure you're treated fairly in terms of your financial situation. And they do a lot of courses on sort of what's, you know, financial literacy, so to speak. But I'll give you an example of a case very recent where our economic justice project worked with a project I'm director of, the Impact Litigation Project, to represent a woman and her husband who had gotten into a rent-to-own contract where they made 60 monthly payments. At the end of the 60 payments, the deed was to be turned over to them, and they would own the house. They made 56 of them, and then four of them were late because COVID had hit, and the woman lost her job. She eventually made the four payments, yet the owner of the property, or the previous owner of the property, sued to have them evicted, saying he should be able to keep the 60 payments they'd made and take the house back and sell it to make even more money. And that would have happened, but for us getting involved to represent her, we had a court hearing. And near the end of the hearing, we worked out a settlement agreement, and the owner agreed to give the house to her, which should have happened earlier in our view. But that's the sort of thing where our economic justice program tries to help people who otherwise are being mistreated in terms of something related to the financial system.
Great. Now, Rob, also another area of focus for the Mississippi Center for Justice is disaster recovery. And those of us that lived in Mississippi during a couple of disasters, Hurricane Katrina will always be the first one that comes to my mind. Tell me a little bit about what the center has done related to helping with disaster recovery and protecting the rights of individuals.
Well, the center started in 2003. And then Hurricane Katrina hit in August of 2005. And the center immediately recognized, you know, there was obviously big needs on the Gulf Coast. But, you know, some people were once you dealt with the basics of food, shelter, et cetera, there were people who were going to need legal help. I mean, all the possessions were wiped away, houses were destroyed, and people lost all their possessions. And there was a real need for people just to know how to get started and how the legal system could impact their situation. And the Mississippi Center for Justice recruited lawyers from around the country who came down to the Gulf Coast and just, you know, staffed clinics down in the Gulf Coast of people who needed help. And so it was sort of the beginning of a real legacy for MCJ, and it ended up in the opening of a separate office down in Biloxi to help people on the coast with disaster recovery and later other things. And then after the BP oil spill several years later, MCJ did the same thing and went in and offered people free legal services and helped them obtain recoveries that they were entitled to under the law after the BP oil spill. And so those two events have been very defining moments in the history of MCJ, and we still have that office down on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And in fact, in addition to these things, it houses our housing discrimination project. We also have an office up in the Mississippi Delta in Indianola.
So one thing,
as well as the main office in Jackson.
I really appreciate that you mentioned the pro bono legal assistance and the regional legal response to this. I was also privy to some things at that time related to the influx of attorneys from out of state that were coming in to volunteer their time, especially post-Katrina. I think there was an element of that, too, related to the BP oil spill. It cannot be said enough how many people came to the aid of Mississippi during that time. The other part that sticks out specifically about Katrina is just this remarkable reaction of the folks that were going through a very hard time and their generosity to others. I remember people standing in line to get something, and they would be handed, like, no, someone needs it more than I do. And you'd have to try to talk them into taking it. And I think that, you know, so that was obviously food and water, but it expanded beyond that. And we tend to forget sometimes just how much we end up helping each other. But we had a really nice run of lawyers that came through to help Mississippians during that time. And I know your organization was a big part of bringing that and making it happen.
Yeah, and you know, there were a lot of different groups who were helping, including on the legal front, the Mississippi Bar, and MCJ coordinated with the bar as well as people from out of state to really try to help fill a need there.
Let's jump right in on the topic of health. What does the Mississippi Center of Justice do regarding trying to help and improve the health of Mississippians and of your clients?
Well, before I answer that, I want to say, Adam, you're an all-star host, and I'm really glad.
Thank you. It's just because Liz makes me look smart. Thank you.
And you, another all-star host, Richard Gershon, had to step down. I'm glad you're stepping in, and it's so great to talk with you. I always enjoy talking with you in private, and now we're getting to do so on there, and I really appreciate it. Our health law project is in the middle of the Medicaid expansion fight. And of course, that ended in a very, you know, once again, a legislative session ended without any expansion of Medicaid. It looked like it could happen this session. And I know Linda Dixon, who's the director of our health law project, and so many others worked on that. And it was a real disappointment that it did not happen. The Health Law Project works also in trying to eliminate and overcome roadblocks to things like Medicaid for the people who otherwise are eligible for it. Hopefully it will be expanded at some point in the next year or so, so that more people can take advantage of it. For those people who are eligible, there's still a lot of roadblocks there, and particularly for people who don't have money, who don't have, you know, maybe access to technology, aren't familiar with the you know, filling out. You know, for a lawyer, it's second nature to think, okay, if I want to do something, I've got to fill out this form and this form and this form. But those of us, we don't think about, you know, what about people who aren't accustomed to doing that in their lives? And then they just need to get signed up for Medicaid so they can go see a doctor. And not have to pay, you know, in who they otherwise couldn't afford. But that's just not second nature to a lot of people. And so there are a lot of barriers that get set up by governments, Mississippi and elsewhere, that are unnecessary. And our health law policy is really trying to help people navigate that, overcome those barriers, and help them take advantage of the exchange systems for the Affordable Care Act, the Federal Affordable Care Act for health insurance, and the fighting against discrimination against people with AIDS. They're doing a lot of things to basically make healthcare more available, more affordable, and to really try to help people who otherwise are left out, left on the margins.
So, Rob, I'm sensing a theme from the work of the center and your work, and you know, I understand you also have your own private practice that keeps you active as well. Just a general question. These are heady topics, Rob. This is not light fare. These various issues that the center works on and the work you do. How do you bridge that gap to help your clients understand where they are in this matter and where they fit? It seems to me that it's pretty easy to help someone understand, you know, hey, you've got this financial situation now. But how do you reach your clients and help them understand some complicated issues?
Yeah, you know, it's really, you remember, I don't even remember the movie. I think it was Philadelphia. It was Denzel Washington plays a lawyer. Right. Is it Philadelphia? You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
Maybe
call
Philadelphia.
Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks. And I keep remembering his statement when he's questioning people. He says, explain it to me like I'm a six-year-old, and the Denzel Washington character. And I think it's so, you know, and this particular problem with lawyers is we get into this. We live in a world where there's a different sort of language. It's almost like Greek or something. And so we write our legal papers in sort of formalistic language. And I just really think whether it's communicating to anyone, but particularly to juries and with clients, is sort of, you may have a complicated legal concept, but you learn to explain it in terms that people can understand.
Yeah. And so
I just think that's, it's so important for a lawyer, and I see some people who really know how to write well, write clearly, express themselves clearly, and others who just get caught up in the language and the lingo. And so it's really a matter of explaining things to people. And, you know, the truth is, I mean, we're able to offer a service to people because we're a nonprofit who can't afford it. And the people we have the honor of representing and get to work with are usually so – yeah, they're appreciative that we're able to help. And it's really, you know, part of the joy of these cases is working with the clients and working with people and trying to help them navigate difficult situations. And is, you know, whenever any of us are in a difficult situation, we always appreciate it if somebody can help. And we're really lucky to be able to try to help the people that we serve.
I have a question. You know, a lot of the cases that we have been talking about on this show are grandiose. They are visionary. They are, I guess, maybe precedent setting, or they're big cases. Does the Mississippi Center for Justice, you know, only seek out or accept big cases? Do they have little ones also? I know we've also mentioned the Mississippi Bar has a page of, you know, if you are financially unable to actually hire an attorney, they have a lot of resources. But how does the Mississippi Center for Justice select their clients or what cases they take?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we you know, any office can only take so many cases, and one thing we are trying to do is take the cases that can make the biggest difference. And a lot of times we get calls about individual cases that may not have another impact. Sometimes we'll take them. Sometimes we'll see cases that may at first blush look like they're just about an individual, but they really can have a larger impact. The Curtis Flowers case is one that we've talked about on this show before. The man was was imprisoned, wrongly imprisoned for 23 years, tried six times for a crime he didn't commit in a situation where the prosecutor, as the U.S. Supreme Court later described it, was engaged in a relentless effort to keep black people off the jury. And we just thought there were larger issues in that that we could expose by taking on that case and helping to get Curtis Flowers out of prison. But it generally we're trying to think how can we do the most with the time we have. And so we do look at cases and say, is this going to have an impact elsewhere? Is this, and maybe it's not going to, but or is this going to sort of call attention? Is it going to shine light on a problem that otherwise would not be exposed? So, yes, we do try to take those cases. Now, there is a, you know, there is a legal services program, Central Mississippi Legal Services in Jackson, North Mississippi Rural Legal Services up in, generally based in Oxford, South Mississippi Legal Services in Hattiesburg, and I believe they have an office on the coast. They do some individual cases, do a lot of eviction cases. We do some eviction work, but they do creditors' rights and other individual cases. And I know the bar has some programs. I'm not, and Adam, you may be more familiar with those than I am, to help people with cases that may not necessarily be impact cases.
We do get calls from individuals here on In Legal Terms, and we do refer them to the Mississippi Bar's webpage because they've got a great summary of the different projects or the different firms or not-for-profits around the state that do take on those kind of things. Adam, did you want to say more?
Yeah, just briefly, you know, what we're talking about in a sense in law world or law firm world, it's called intake. And you are, you know, receiving information on people that, you know, may have a legal matter and need representation. And what Rob has described today is again, trying to maximize and pick the best one. You know, we've already had a new term today, or at least a term we've discussed in the term standing. There are other factors in play that when a person approaches a lawyer about possibly representing them and they, you know, the situation's real, the circumstances are significant, but sometimes it's not a good case. And it might be because there's not good standing, or it might be something else. So, you know, I think, Rob, one of the things I've had a challenge with in speaking to folks that needed representation is, yes, something happened here, but it's not going to be a good case for us to go forward. And I don't know if you have any magic answer for that, Rob, but how do you tell people, I am so sorry this happened and it doesn't make sense for us to take on a case?
Yeah, I mean, you have to, you know, you have to be honest. I mean, you try to, in some cases, there's some problems that exist that the legal system just can't respond to. It's not suited to it. And sometimes you just have to talk to people about that and maybe explain if there are other options they can look at to try to improve their situation or deal with a particular problem. But it is, you know, there's a lot of people struggling out there. And you know, we as lawyers occasionally get an opportunity to help some of them. But it's difficult to have to tell someone, I'm sorry, we can't help you. But sometimes you just have to do that because you can't take every case you get called on. Because if you have too many cases, you won't spend the proper time on any of them and won't do a good job on any of them. So you really have to be selective in terms of how you use your time. It's true in law. It's true in anything.
Speaking of time, we have a few minutes left. If anyone wants to call in with a question or a comment about the work of the Mississippi Center for Justice, that phone number is 1-877-MPB-RING, 1-877-672-7464. We take your questions anytime on our email address, legalterms@mpbonline.org. So how could you support the work of the Mississippi Center for Justice? I've got an unexpected way you can help out. That's next. This is In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
Our goal at Everyday Tech is to keep your technology not only working, but working for you. I'm the host, Abram Naney, and you can join me and my friends Wednesday mornings at 10 on MPB Think Radio. Or search Everyday Tech on your favorite podcasting app or download the MPB Public Media app.
What's your favorite type of music? The old standards? Country? A specific type of jazz? Maybe you love classical. In addition to Think and Radio Reading Service, we broadcast MPB Music Radio. Listen live to essential and emerging artists from your HD radio, our app, or from mpbonline.org.
You're listening to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio. To call the show, dial 1-877-MPB-RING. That's 877-672-7464. Or email legalterms@mpbonline.org. This is MPB Think Radio.
This is MPB Think Radio's In Legal Terms. Listen live to us online from mpbonline.org or from the MPB Public Media app. Tuesdays, following our over-the-air broadcast, you can hear Southern Remedies Relatively Speaking with Dr. Susan Buttress on MPB Think Radio at 11 a.m. Central. So if you're interested in supporting the Mississippi for Center for Justice, you are in luck. They're hiring. Their career page has a list of opportunities, and not just attorneys. They are a social media or administrative work. They have a whole list of different opportunities to work for the center. They are also a not-for-profit that accepts contributions. So you can go to their website and learn more about how you could help the Mississippi Center for Justice. That website again, MSCenterForJustice.org. We're talking with Rob McDuff from the Mississippi Center for Justice. We were just talking about how attorneys and how law firms select clients. And let's go to Louisiana and speak with Miller. Miller, what's your comment or question?
Well, in Louisiana, it's so hard to get help down here from anybody that you can, from a lawyer or, if you're down and out to where you're in health condition, you can't work no more, you can't get no help from that or nothing down here. And it's like they send you from one place to another, and they just send you back and forth there.
Miller, is it a disability issue? It sounds like you're having some health issues that has kept you from being able to work. Is that correct, sir?
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
And so are you having difficulty finding an attorney? Or have you spoken to an attorney yet?
Well, I have, but, I hadn't heard nothing else from them or nothing like that.
Okay. So, practical advice is you may not want to wait on one person and hear back. You may need to reach out to more than one. The practical ways to look for someone, first off, is word of mouth. You may have some people in your community that have already had to have legal representation. Here in Mississippi, which I understand you're in Louisiana, we've got a directory on the Mississippi Bar website that can help you find a lawyer. If you haven't already, you may want to look into the resources of the Louisiana Bar and see what they have as a possibility. Rob, any suggestions on that front as far as trying to seek an attorney? I know this is in another state, but I think a lot of these things are the basics and the same anywhere we go.
No, I think you gave the right advice, Adam. I will say that there are a lot of lawyers out there doing a lot of great work, but it's very important for lawyers to communicate with their clients and with the people who call them. And if you say, if a lawyer says, I'm going to call you back, they need to call back. I've had so many people say, I've hired a lawyer, or a lawyer's agreed to help me, but they never call me back. And I've called for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it's important in law, as in anything else, is make sure you communicate with the people who are relying on you.
And while it's disappointing for the client, lawyers are encouraged to explain it to the extent necessary, not only what the representation is, but what the representation is not, as in, I'm not undertaking this case. I'm sorry, but this doesn't make sense for this or that reason. And again, as we were discussing before the last break, it can be for a variety of reasons. And it's not necessarily that something bad didn't happen. It's just that's not a good case.
Miller, good luck. I hope that helps. Let's move on to our last call, Hattiesburg. We're going to speak with Ellen. Ellen, thanks for calling in to In Legal Terms. Rob McDuff from the Mississippi Center for Justice is our guest. What's your question or comment?
I don't really have a question, but I have a comment. I am in Hattiesburg, and I heard Rob's personal story of how he got to become a lawyer, and the fact that he used and even mentioned in his comment his school library at either Timms Junior High, Hattiesburg High, I don't know where. But it made me think of how libraries are under siege right now and how they do make a difference in people's lives and, in his case, the trajectory of his life. And I want to thank him for his work and what he has done.
Ellen, thank you for your call. I love that a library is mentioned, and we're getting the pleasure of looking at Rob while he received that phone call, and his grin is bigger than the screen. Rob, I get a sense you're pro-library.
I'm pro-library. I'm pro-library for many reasons. And Ellen, it's nice to hear from you. Thank you for that call. It was actually at Hattiesburg High that I found that particular book. Ellen mentioned our libraries are under siege in many ways, and we need to support them and need to be able for people to be able to get books without unreasonable censorship. And just libraries are a wonderful thing. It's a real community coming together so people have access to knowledge without having to pay money for it.
Well, and Ellen, thanks for bringing that up. I will put on this podcast information where we had some librarians on In Legal Terms talking about some of the legal resources that are available to Mississippi patrons at their library. All right, Adam, you got a minute and a half One last question for Rob.
Rob, I'm going to hit you with this one. I could have hit you with it first, so apologies, but not really. What is the George Riley Impact Litigation Initiative? That is something that you started back with the it was a 10-year initiative started in 2017. Tell me what the goal is there.
Yeah, and it was named after George Riley, a former board member who actually was a lawyer who represented Steve Jobs and Apple. And Riley Morris, our then director, after George died at far too young an age, raised the money from Apple and from Steve Jobs's from the Emerson Collective, which is run by Steve Jobs's wife, who survived him after he died. And they donated the money for this project, and it's designed to have an impact. And to pursue cases and issues that will have a large impact in issues of racial and economic justice. But we have a lot of flexibility. We do cases on voting rights. We do cases on police misconduct, free speech, workers' rights, and on and on and on. And so it's been a real pleasure to be part of that.
It looks like it ties right into the obviously the mission of the organization, but also the topics you've already mentioned a few. But housing, consumer protection, we discussed education earlier. It looks like that really does fit in there. Rob, any parting words for us? We sure appreciate your time today. It's been very enlightening, I'm hopeful that the listeners learned a lot. We learned about standing and maybe a couple other things as we went today.
Well, it's great being with you. You know, just like I love public libraries, I love public radio, and all of the programming you do. And you're not just motivated. You know, you're not motivated by profit. It's a great public enterprise. And I'm very lucky to work with the people at Mississippi Justice Center for Justice, my team, the other projects, and it's a pleasure to be able to join you and talk about it.
That's going to wrap us up. Thank you very much, Rob McDuff from Mississippi Center for Justice. Our team here at In Legal Terms consists of board engineer Marissa Vaughn. Lacey Alexander was on the phones for us. And our expert host is Adam Kilgore. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, man.
Join us next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central for In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
Thanks for listening to this MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB depends on support from listeners, so if you can, please contribute today at mpbonline.org.